Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and I will be talking about one of Billy's books called The Goblet of Truth this evening. You can download this book on several websites. I recommend that you just Google Goblet of Truth, Billy Meyer, and you can find it on the FIGU website, download it. It's an amazing book. It has a tremendous amount of information in it. Billy downloaded actually the first 14 chapters of this from what are called the planetary storage banks. And evidently this is a very difficult process. It really takes a lot out of you to be able to do this. And Billy completed this book in an incredibly short period of time, but I think it impacted his health a little bit and took him a little while to recover from it. But it is a wealth of information. The more you study it, the more you realize it has an unbelievable amount of information there. It takes time, I think, too, to really be able to sift through this and absorb and understand everything that is being said. If you get a chance, Google Ohio Exopolitics and go out to my exopoliticsohio.us site. There are two Billy Meyer pages there. I just moved the Goblet of Truth study notes to Billy Meyer 2, page 2, to lessen the massive size of page 1. The question this evening, one of the questions that I want to answer is, good or evil? What is human nature? The Goblet of Truth says that no human being is fundamentally evil because he or she is not genetically programmed by nature for gewalt and manipulation. Now, what is this word that pops up in this first sentence, Gewalt? This is one of these German words that Billy throws in to try to add a little more understanding. Gewalt has nothing to do with the terms violent or violence. It's an old Aryan term that means a lot more than just violence or violent. It has to do with using all of the coercive means at one's disposal, the physical, the psychical, the mental, the consciousness-based powers, your abilities and skills in order to carry out and carry through terrible actions and deeds. So Gewalt is much worse than just violence. Now, what it says here is no human being is fundamentally evil, and he is not genetically programmed by nature for evil. I think I've defined evil before. I'll have to look through my notes. But it would be an interesting thing to define that again as well. One of the key words here is program. Let's define what program means. To program means to provide a computer or other machine with coded instructions for the automatic performance of a particular task. To program can also mean to cause, to absorb, or incorporate automatic responses, attitudes, or the like to condition. So there's nothing in our genes that makes us automatically evil. Something is automatic when it is done or it occurs spontaneously without conscious thought or intention. Now, this is a little bit different than what religion has taught us. Religion has taught us that there is something called original sin, that when Adam and Eve sinned, it affected their genetics, and then that literal sin, some churches teach, is as that sin is passed down genetically when the child is born and he inherits the sin of Adam. Now, the Meyer information disagrees with that and says that creation does not genetically program us for evil. Now, there's a very interesting page I'm going to read a bit of, and it's out on the Future of Mankind site. I put the link in the chat room. It's called Happiness, Gewalt, and Other Behavior Patterns of Human Beings. And Billy is having a discussion here. Well, maybe Billy's just talking here. Anyway, it almost sounds like it's from a contact, but I'm not sure. It says Happiness and Gewalt, as well as all other behavior patterns of human beings, are highly contagious and thus determine the behavior for family of family members, friends, acquaintances, groups, small and large masses of human beings. Now think about that. When you get out of sorts, when you get out of control, when your thoughts become negative, when your thoughts become unhealthy, you can pass that on to your family members, your friends, to even large masses of human beings. That shows you how powerful our thoughts are and how important it is to keep our eye on our own thoughts. Remember, thoughts always need to be neutral, positive. The behavior of an individual is able to be contagious to many others because the human brain, respectively, the thoughts proceeding from out of the consciousness and the feelings resulting from them are able to infect one another. Thoughts, it says in the Might of Thoughts book, thoughts lead to feelings. If you're having a feeling that's uncomfortable, that's sad, negative, depressed, try to trace it back because a thought triggered that feeling. Feelings can lead to habits. Based on our feelings, we'll start behavior patterns. Those behavior patterns can lead to suffering, to happiness, depending on whether they're productive or unproductive behavior patterns. So be very aware that your thoughts will create feelings. The corresponding manifold behavioral forms, which are built up from the thoughts and feelings resulting from them, reach from joy, harmony, love, peace, freedom, gladness, happiness, and gewalt, up to hatred, revenge, retribution, murder, suicide. This infection from brain to brain, from consciousness to consciousness, respectively from thought to thought and from feeling to feeling, works like a virus infestation, which is why thought virus and feeling virus can be spoken of, which, however, is only to be understood as a comparison. Wow, we can have thought and feeling viruses, so to speak. I believe that because I know I feel my own negative thoughts circulating at times, and I have to get a handle on those. I have a caller. I'm not sure if this person wants to come on the air. 949, are you listening?
Hi.
Is this Nate?
Hi, Mark. Yeah.
How are you, sir?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing real good. I think the topic that I have tonight, I have just the right guy to talk to about it. For some reason, this strikes me as something that you have studied, because I know you've studied the Might of Thoughts book.
Yeah, viruses. That's great. I oftentimes think when I get a feeling or I get a thought, I question, is that my thought or is it somebody else's thought?
That's very interesting.
I was explaining to somebody recently about the whole idea. I mean, this isn't like hocus pocus or magic or anything, because thoughts can be actually measured with our current science and stuff as waves, you know, pulsing, you know, through our brains and out of our brains and stuff. And it would be highly probable, I mean, knowing what we know, like when you look at someone through a room or something and they turn around and instantly look at you or vice versa, that you are somehow sending out some sort of signal that their subconscious picks up and it feeds to their conscious self, and film turns around and they see you there.
Isn't that an interesting phenomenon? That to me is the precursor to telepathy.
Yeah, I think that's a natural ability in all human beings, but that I guess that involves our sixth and seventh senses that we have been told or not even taught about that actually exist. Because when we look at modern science and stuff, they actually have something called coincidence or random chance, which if anybody's understands the law of cause and effect, there's no such thing. No.
Well, explain that. So, because of the law of cause and effect, there really is no random chance.
Right. I mean, think about it. If you could, for example, look at like lottery balls sitting around and popping up. If you could somehow do the mathematical calculation, is this guy's going to hit this guy, and you know how crazy that gets him there? But you'd be able to tell, based on, you know, everything beforehand. I mean, if you were really that good, which numbers would be chosen? And for us, it's a matter, you know, then someone goes, well, what if I pick the number? You know, I think then that's more along the line of aligning yourself with that type of energy, you know?
Oh,
and I know that's kind of hocus pocus right there, but... If I look at it like maybe a fish, you know, maybe there's a pond and there's two types of fish. There's a red fish and a blue fish. And you throw a specific type of bait in the water. And you're, you know, the bait is your like your thought or your energy, your vibration. And you're like the hook. And the fish that you attract is the coming from that thought you send out. And then, you know, the... So that kind of aligns with the law of attraction stuff.
Well, that's very interesting because I just read that passage that talked about how our thoughts are contagious. So would you think that a healthy thought, a good thought, would also attract certain kinds of people or certain things into your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I see it over and over and over again. I see certain patterns in my life that I don't necessarily like or that I do like. And it's very hard at this stage because you have to monitor your thoughts and then be aware that this is what's actually happening because of your thought or your thinking, which it will generate some sort of wave and align that energy to you. And oftentimes, like, when people get this energy or get something, they don't realize it's them. But, you know, I have a sister who's, like, a chronic victim, you know. And I tell her, you know, it's how you're thinking about things. And she's, like, beyond the point there's a, you know, to really see it. She just thinks it's her dumb luck and stuff, which it is, but... But then luck would be her self aligning with, you know, these events, putting herself in the firing line of these events that are happening around her.
It's interesting. You know, animals are a good study sometimes when you're looking at behavior and you're looking at thoughts. And now that I am taking care of cats that I rescued this winter, I'm seeing that they do compete for food, you know, they have a certain built-in competition for food, a franticness. But once they're fed, they're not, how can I say this? If it's a nice day and it's warm and they're fed, they're not competitive, they're not violent, it's almost like once their basic needs are met, they're almost, by their nature, affectionate. And maybe, in a sense, that is what, maybe not exactly the way I'm describing it, but maybe that's what is being described here in the Goblet of Truth and in this other writing that nature doesn't genetically program us for gewalt, which is worse than violence even. But sometimes we fall into these behavior patterns anyway, which is quite unfortunate, because if we can reconnect with nature, we can keep our minds clear, and we can somehow avoid these negative thought patterns. Any does that resonate with you? What are your thoughts?
I think that first, the idea of a virus, it kind of popped in my head right there. I've talked to people that have been in situations where a riot or something was about to start, and they feel this, like, this uncertainty and this extreme intenseness come over the crowd where they're standing, and they don't know what's going to happen, and then the place kind of goes crazy. So I've had friends that would talk about that type of experience and stuff, and then in a lot of people not knowing that thoughts affect things, you know, that there's actually, you can affect somebody else by the way you're thinking. You know, I had a friend recently come into my house and say, well, I don't like it. It's bad energy. And I didn't notice it because I had been gone for like 5 days and stuff. But my wife, I guess she was kind of depressed or something. And we kind of talked it out. But he noticed something that was going on when he just walked into my house. And so, you know.
That's interesting. So maybe your friend was feeling the bad energy that was being created by your wife's struggle with this thing, that whatever it was bothering her, making her depressed. This guy sensed that.
Right. And that's a big thing there, right? Because like I say, when if I ever feel something, or I ever, you know, if someone walks in the room and I feel something, or I feel a non-alignment with that person, it's not with that person, it's with what they're thinking. Then I question, is it me, is it them? You know, maybe it's on a subconscious level. Somebody was wearing a polka dot shirt once, and they mistreated me, and this guy just happened to walk in, and he was wearing a polka dot shirt, but I didn't realize it, but I just didn't like this guy, and I didn't know why. I mean, we're talking about, like, as we evolve and as we grow, to really pay attention to our thinking, really pay attention to our feelings, and not to grow things that are very, negative in nature, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me back to the whole, just reminds me of the garden. What do you want growing in your garden, your consciousness garden? You know, because we know that feelings and emotions are actually different than one another. And how that works is, well, a feeling is, I akin it to like growing an oak tree, you know. Once you've grown it to a certain point, it can pretty much withstand anything, but there's a long process taking care of it and nurturing it while it's young and stuff, and protecting it. But like with emotions, it's really powerful and in your face, and you're almost out of control with emotions and stuff. And go ahead.
I know thoughts lead to feelings, and then do feelings sometimes cause emotions?
As far as I'm to understand, no. I'd say there's a complete difference between it's kind of hard, but I think feelings are emotions are attached to more baser things. But I may be wrong with that, because I may be talking about, you know, we could build a, let's say we started hating somebody.
Right.
And we were kind of fighting it, but in our mind, we were building this, we were planting this tree, or and we were slowly protecting this hatred we have for this person or this group of people and stuff. And so it got to a point where we became extremely, you know, violent or in our thoughts anytime the mere mention of these people or we see these people or stuff. I think that can also be equated to a feeling, you know, and then peeling back the layers of that feeling and undoing that feeling that you have created over time would be extremely difficult to do. Take example like
right.
being raised on religion, like from a childhood, you don't really have any defense, but you keep on feeding yourself this because it's being fed to you and stuff, and don't question, you're not responsible, and it kind of goes up, you know. So then later on, if someone challenges this, you're like, hey, and you're going to defend it, you know.
You're threatened.
Right.
In a sense. You know, when you were talking about hatred and hatred leading to violence, and I was talking about animals and behavior patterns before, I thought of a clip that I had created, and it's a clip from the Veterans Today radio show program. And one of the guys on the program who's speaking here is named Gordon Duff, and he's talking about poachers in Africa. And, you know, that, and as far as our conversation goes, it's a little bit off topic, but in a way, no, because what is the thought pattern of a poacher? You know what I'm saying? What is the thought pattern of a guy that is willing to go in and risk himself being put in jail to go kill an animal? What kind of thought pattern is this? And in Africa, they will kill the poachers. They have very, very strict laws about poaching. So let me play this clip, and then we can maybe chat a bit about this.
That giraffes, and they call them bull giraffes. I shot 3 bull giraffes this today. Yeah, they were eating stuff off a tree. I had to kill them, you know. Yeah, I'm getting word out here somebody turned their speakers down, and mine are way down. Although I'm not getting the feedback, I'm also not listening to the radio show either. And there was quite a negative reaction to this, because we have teams in, certainly in Africa, multiple teams in Africa, South Africa, Kenya, Botswana, that are hunting poachers right now. And it wouldn't take much to get me to hunt hunters. Rich hunters, rich American hunters, rich American elephant hunters, and their guides. And, you know, let them have the minor feel of a 7mm magnum in the back of the head at 450 meters. It's a serious issue with me. The idea of killing elephants, you know, I'm a pets guy. One of the things we had added to the house here, to the cats and 3 guinea pigs, I have 3 guinea pigs, and you know, I live in a what's technically a wildlife area with animals through the yard continually, who don't harm anything. But we got a year ago a rescue pit bull, and Jeff Rentz goes after me about this, but she's usually in the room here with me. We had in Toledo, Ohio, a game warden, dog catcher named Skelton, who killed thousands of pit any animal that he thought might have part pit bull that he got a hold of, he killed. Now,
anyway, I wanted to bring that up, Nate, just as an example of killing in degeneracy, this guy that would just kill pit bulls no matter what. And by contrast, Gordon Duff there, who seems to have a great appreciation for animals. You know, the Meyer material says the fundamental directive, the fundamental creative natural law, my understanding is love. So to indiscriminately kill seems to be antithetical to the whole reason or our fundamental laws, our fundamental way of creation. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I would say first I would like to define love as the absolute knowledge that you coexist and co-live with all of creation. And I think that's very important when people use the word love, because I don't think people really understand. I think they come from the point of view that, well, it's my opinion, you know, a love to me is, you know, and they start talking about all these, you know, material-driven loves, these transitory loves. So these, I think we talked, or you talked about it a while back, effective versus effective love. So there, when it comes to killing something, unless we made a grave mistake, and it's per something to do with our survival or the survival of something that can't defend itself. For example, if we, a while back, I think bullfrogs were introduced into a lot of habitats where they shouldn't have been, and they just started destroying everything. So at that point, we should do our best to remove all the bullfrogs from that area. This probably means destroying them, well, you know. But you know, we can eat their legs, so I guess that's okay. bullfrog legs, yeah. So, anyways, you know, when it comes to killing on either scope, I mean, I hear the host of the other show, and he was talking like, oh yeah, you know, I would totally go and murder someone for murdering an animal. You know, I can see it in a defense of an animal.
Right.
But I can't see him murdering someone. I can't put my head around it. You know, I am very emotional, or I have been very emotional. I think if I had a dog when I was growing up, and you know, we were already pretty damn close, and if anybody would have touched him or anything like that, I would just, you know, have gone ballistic. There was a couple right. times where I was afraid that some police officers were going to do that, but fortunately
wow.
they didn't. So, you know, dogs love men in uniforms or women.
I had an amazing, weird, strange experience yesterday. A sick raccoon had, for whatever reason, curled up on my front porch out here in the corner. And it was just kind of, you know, looked like it was dying, more or less. So I called 911, and eventually a sheriff came out, a real young sheriff. He was a real nice guy. And I let him do all the hard work. I gave him a broom, but he was able to shoo the animal off the porch eventually. Well, you know, it's up on the second level of the house, so the dang thing literally jumped to the ground. It was a pretty long fall, and then we had to chase it around the side of the fence, and it got inside the fence and then climbed up on the back porch, and we shooed it off the back porch, but it had gotten into this, like, it's hard to describe, this plastic thing where we were going to grow tomatoes in, so he had to kind of carry this raccoon, you know, through part of the yard and get it to get out of this, what turned out to be kind of a plastic trap, and then it ran off. And I thought he was going to shoot it because it was the first thing I'd asked him. You're probably going to have to shoot it, aren't you? And he said, yeah. But it managed to get away into the woods, which on the one hand I was kind of relieved that it got away because he didn't have to get shot. But on one other hand, I don't want it coming back. So that's a little bit off topic, but that was a very strange experience I had yesterday, you know, coming to deal with this whole life and death thing in creation, and what is being responsible anyway. Hold on to your thoughts, Nate, because I want to hear more from that. I'm going to pick back up in this clip real quick, and we can continue this conversation.
Fight pit bulls and abuse them. We need to put them down, and I'll put up money to do that. They need to go, you know, and I don't care if they're professional football or basketball players. I can't overlook that. That's utterly insane. People who fight animals need to be put down. Like people who have sex with children, they need to be put down. They're not savable. This is utterly crazy. And people who think they know things about animals. You live in a community where we have government by, and they're Democrats, heaven forbid, I'm a Democrat. What a pack of thieves we have here in Lucas County, Ohio, anyway. And then it's the same pretty much everywhere. Down the road from me, the griping day here, I'm getting a griping day. Down the road, I can get on my motorcycle, and in about 35, 40 minutes, I'm in Indiana. Indiana has a religious freedom law that allows people to discriminate against people they suspect might be homosexual. Now, I'm in a state where it's pretty much mandatory to marry your own cousin or sister or brother. Indiana, when I head down Angola Road, which is not a bad bike ride, you know, it's not a great bike ride, frankly, you know, it's farms and, you know, giant horseflies hitting me in the forehead, but...
Anyway, we're getting a little bit way off the topic of thoughts. Really, that's kind of where we started with all of this is learning to control our thoughts and understanding that we're not genetically programmed for evil. But when we do have evil, bad thoughts, those thoughts are contagious. Not only can we destroy our own consciousness, but we can pass that on to others. So we need to be really careful about our thoughts. Don't you agree, Nate?
Yeah, we're not programmed for evil. We are programmed for heightened aggressiveness, you know,
yes.
Over-aggressive.
Yes.
And also
true.
What I see in that is one of the things I've been toying with recently is people's they become addicted to their emotions. You know, they become addicted to their, and they form these feedback loops. And this is one of the things that we see that, like, and I was talking a little bit about it earlier about people attracting certain things to them. You know, violence, for example, because they're addicted to that adrenaline rush or that fear state or that domination state or that power state. And so either subconsciously they find themselves around people that they see as victims or oppressors of this state, and they lash out and they attack. I experienced this more when I was younger, and I had a few I would call them jock friends that it always seems every time we went to like a get together or gathering, they would start a fight, and I would never see the fight, but after maybe six or seven times, I realized that, no, out of all this time, I've never gotten into any fights. And this guy, every time he tells me, they started or something they did or something like this, and the first couple of times I was like, oh, yeah, of course. But then after a while, I realized he's full of crap, you know. And he was like that raccoon, you know.
So you're saying that this guy had a certain thought pattern or behavior pattern which led to fights all the time.
Yeah, definitely. If the raccoon comes back to your house, then it's coming there for a reason, right? And that's kind of what this guy would do. Like, it didn't matter where we'd go. He'd always find the person that would fight him. But he was addicted to that state, to that emotion, whatever that is. And, he, you know, I don't know what it was exactly, because it's foreign to me, you know.
Yeah. You know, in the alternative community, there are certain points of view that people have. There seems to be a fascination with catastrophe in this alternative community, you know, the alternative media. Have you noticed that yourself?
Yeah, I've noticed that in this area. Well, it's kind of like, hey, what sells? And you know, they're trying to fit their fix into the old paradigm. And you know, I had a talk with one of my friends a while back, and he was kind of going down this path of hopelessness and stuff. And he was talking about the 800 years, until things get better. And I said, hey, listen, the way I see it is that you and I and people like us are the new age's immune system, okay? And depending on how good or how well we do our jobs, we can bring that 800 years forward.
Right.
800 years, as far as I can tell, is the worst possible scenario, okay? You know, in 3 years, if we do it, it's going to be great, okay? But that would be the best possible scenario.
You know what else? In addition to, besides the 800 years, you know, the Meyer material says everything finally turns for the better and it takes 800 years for all this to completely work itself out. But just think of all the people's lives we could positively affect just with this message, this little thing we're discussing tonight, just with teaching us to really look at our thoughts. And to recognize that not only do thoughts that are unbalanced hurt us, but it also is contagious. Just think, if we put positive thoughts out there, we could also spread those positive, equalized, balanced thoughts as well. We could make a heck of a big difference.
Yes, we could. And that's really how we have to do it, because at certain levels, and without... The only thing that makes us powerful at certain levels is our thinking. I mean, if you think about it, like the CIA, for example, that entity there, you know, you want to talk about poison and just maliciousness and intrigue against all humanity, against all life, you know, there you go. You know, how does little you or little me or someone like us have any power or any influence over that type of entity? You know, so we come back to this idea of thought being able to affect the things outside of us. The solemn peace meditation.
Right.
The solemn peace meditation. For example, that as it is explained in the contact notes and stuff, that certain types of energies are released from the storage banks during that meditation period. And that, you know, just a simple someone deciding to turn left instead of turning right, or delaying in order to do something very hurtful, could be because of that peace meditation. It could be, you know. So that's what I'm hopeful for.
That's really good, and I think it's very important to be hopeful and positive. And more and more and more, I find myself just sitting outside and enjoying nature. I'm kind of like the one radio show host there, Gordon Duff, in that I live right beside a state park. He said he basically lives in a nature preserve. And just reconnecting with nature and with creation is so restorative. It puts you in a neutral point of view immediately. There's also something magical about watching the sun come up and listening to all of the birds as they start their sounds and start to wake up. You know, part of the problem with population, and for me, I think this is one of the huge problems with population, is that inevitably we destroy nature. We destroy the wooded areas. We destroy our forests. And that, when people don't have that escape, I think it tends to make them more aggressive. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, overpopulation magnifies every single problem we have. It destroys reason and logic like no other, you know, because you're no longer, you don't have that ability to grow. And you, especially in this type of society where it's kind of a dog eat dog, and it puts you into the survival state, you know, where's my next paycheck coming from? I can compromise my good nature to ensure that I have, I'm going to be taken care of for the next month. You know, by, you know, screwing this person over or by not doing the right thing here because it would cost me money. You know, if people just think in terms of a social problem and then, you know, add more people to that problem, unless it's holding down some part of the continent so it doesn't float out into space, I don't think there's going to be any positive coming from adding more population.
It's interesting that you talked about dog eat dog and getting into a survival state and how, you know, that can lead to war. There's a researcher, his name is Joel Skousen, and he says there is a potential for nuclear war. Let me play this clip. It's quite interesting.
Bunkers because of terrorism. Your chances of really getting hurt from even, you know, the false flag terrorism, which all the big events are, is really less than 0.5% or less, but your chances of being affected by this coming nuclear war with Russia and China are absolute assured. Everybody's going to be affected by it. And so that really tells you something. You know, the insiders see the government building brand new deep underground bunkers, abandoning old bunkers like Cheyenne Mountain because they know they're targeted. So there's a whole new series of bunkers being built. And when they retire, they're doing the same thing, but you'll notice, Alex, that FEMA is not warning American people that there's any nuclear threat at all. But we, you know, I used to get a lot of flack from people because of my predictions about Russia and China being the real target, not terrorism. But nobody's laughing now. Everybody sees Russia getting more aggressive, China getting more aggressive. It's really just a matter of time. It's driving the elite to do this. And I might say, even though I am aware of high-level government officials doing this, I do not design for these people. I will not work for ex-government.
Sure, I know you just talked about, I guess, your other contacts and sources,
right,
then, and them approaching you.
Right.
Joel, if we had the engineers, we had the time, the media people, we could go back to you 10 years ago here, 15 years ago here. You've been coming on the show 16, 17 years, I guess. You've been on since about 1998 or so, if memory serves, so that's about 16, 17 years. But we could go back 2-3 years ago, and you were saying China's being the new enemy, Russia, we're going to start escalating crises there. And then sure enough now, you're right, people say, new nuclear war, that's all over. Now we have Boehner saying the world's on fire, all these top analysts saying we're in greater danger of nuclear war than any other time. You can see the move. You see Russia feverishly digging in, building some estimates are 400 square mile underground bunkers under mountains.
Anyway, I think we can avoid this coming war. I think we can avoid the Third World War. I think we can, through programs like this, through the peace meditation, through people meeting in their homes and studying the Meyer material, I have to think that we can stop some of these potential things. But if we don't continue to do what we're doing, studying this material, looking at our thoughts, taking time to reconnect with nature, then these other things can possibly happen. What are your comments, Nate?
I think we're already suffering from nuclear testing and nuclear wars, but they're indirect nuclear wars. They're just testing of nuclear weapons by irresponsible people, and that on top of that, the Meyer material talks about how a lot of the a lot of the lung cancer out there is caused by radiation.
Really?
In fact, James Deardorff, who did TJResearch.info, was a professor, I think, at Oregon State. He recently passed away from lung cancer, and he had never smoked or lived with a smoker his whole life.
Wow.
You know, and that's very sad because he brought a lot of scientific point of view and research into the Meyer material, specifically the Talmud Emanuel.
You know, we were talking earlier today. I had brought up the Council of Nicaea, the first Council of Nicaea. And when you read stuff like this, you realize how controversial this is. But, I mean, if you look at the basic history of it, we have about four major sources for the Bible, which are manuscripts, ancient manuscripts. They're called Uncio manuscripts. Let me see if I can remember these names. Codex Vaticanus, Codex Sinaiticus, Codex Alexandrinus, and another one they call Freemi or Freemer Scriptus or something along those lines. But these were, this is the New Testament. This is where the New Testament came from. And they didn't write anything down about the life of the Christ figure until almost 3.5 or 4 centuries later. That's an astounding thing, don't you think, Nate?
Yeah, but actually I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was they had different competitors for the New Testament. And Constantine, he was the guy responsible for destroying all those scrolls, right?
Constantine was the guy that got all the different religious leaders together in the Roman Empire, because he was trying to turn Christianity into the state religion of Rome. And one of the first things they had to do was try to figure out what this guy's name was. And when I read that, it blew me away, because I'd always wondered, what in the heck? Why is the Meyer material saying his name was really Emmanuel? Everyone knows his name was Jesus. But if you look historically, what happened at the Council of Nicaea is the first thing they did was have these huge fights about what to call him. Anyway, go ahead.
That's one hell of an insight, too, what you just said there. It's like, hey, what, if the guy existed, he had a name, or he didn't have a name because the guy you're purporting to exist never existed. You know, or, you know, so anyways, there were writings floating around, but there's all these different flavors, all these different Christian flavors, you know, the gospel according to, you know, Paul, the gospel according to Judas, you know, according to Mary, you know, and I think those were floating around. And at the Council of Nicaea, they kind of like, trying to nail everything down to, you know, specific flavors, they also went about murdering people that wanted to, you know, that didn't agree with them. So, you know, they were very adamant about their control.
Yeah. Well, on one particular website, what was said, I can't vouch that this is 100% historically accurate, but it really seemed to resonate with me. They said Constantine stepped in, and they had 5 names picked out, and Constantine stepped in and said, look, we're going to call him Jesus to bring in the British people, because there was a Gaelic god called Jesus. And we're going to call him Krishna to bring in the people from the East. So according to this website, anyway, the They ended up with the name Jesus Krishna, which eventually I could see just how over time that would become Jesus Christ, which
yes.
blew me away. Just completely, and it was a sad. It was also very depressing in a little, in another way. But go ahead.
No, I was just totally agreeing with that. That now people might realize that, you know, religion fundamental nature was not to explain the nature of reality or anything, but it was made by man to control man. That's all it was for, you know, and you got to ask yourself, even at that time, you know, who could read and who could write, you know?
Right. That's
and,
the problem.
Right. I mean, now today, people can read and write, but they kind of choose not to read, you know?
Right.
Or, you know, I think you've probably come across armchair skeptics or people that have been, you know, where you've gone and done your due diligence, you might come across someone who's just like, you know, goes to a skeptic website or something and regurgitates the arguments over there. I run into that an awful lot.
Oh yeah.
But
you know,
I mean, if they would just apply themselves and study and read, then they could come to the table. Because I want, probably like you, I want to find holes in my logic. I want to find holes so I can, you know what the truth is. You know,
right.
Unless someone points out there's mud on my face, I'll walk around going, "Hey, everybody, don't I have the cleanest face?"
Right. And there's so much going on right now in so many different areas. It's sometimes hard to keep track on all of it. One topic that I've been talking about on a couple of the past shows, and it's in the Goblet of Truth there, where Billy describes this dark order that is coming out of our ruling class that's focused on getting the money and really taking control over the whole world. And this is a little bit off the topic, but somewhat related. I mean, if you're wondering, you know, again, good or evil, what is human nature? That's the fundamental question for tonight. And I guess what we're arguing is no human being is fundamentally evil. But it seems like the machinations of our governments are becoming evil. I have a clip here called Operation Jade Helm. And I'll let you listen to this. This is bizarre.
Exercise at the North Texas Regional Airport in Denison.
We had a fictitious enemy situation in which we did detailed mission planning for said Lieutenant Colonel Krupp.
We had a fictitious enemy situation in which we did detailed mission planning for.
Why is Texas continuously being labeled as hostile? Why are all these enemy situations happening in Texas? What is going on? What is the military really, truly planning for? And my other question is we spend millions and millions of dollars in taxpayer money to build these training facilities on government property so the soldiers themselves and their officers can train without being bothered, without bothering other people, and go about it, you know, in a professional manner. We have no problem with that because
there's
that's what
billions.
The money is for. But there is a big problem when you start bringing these training exercises off of government property and into people's backyards. It is a conditioning. It is a psyop to get people used to seeing military presence every day.
Around 250 of the over 800 soldiers in the battalion took part in the airfield seizure operations, learning to take down an enemy. But this exercise was different.
In the video that we're going to go to, the Lieutenant Colonel even says that typically training like this does not happen off base. This happens on base. This is the reason we spend the money on these facilities, and the fact that these guys are not using the facilities is why it's alarming that they keep moving all of a sudden from these bases and off into the civilian population.
Typically, training is done on an active military base, not a public airport. but the change in location benefits the soldiers.
Gives us a different look and a different piece of terrain to actually operate over.
We're not doing this to scare people. We're doing this to bring awareness to the fact that this is conditioning. This is used as a psyop to get you, the public, to being used to seeing this kind of stuff happening all the time. So when it does happen, you're not quite ready. You just think it's another training operation.
Inside of the house, they located a body of a male individual, Caucasian, mid-40s, who appeared to be deceased. They contacted paramedics. LA City paramedics responded, checked the individual, and confirmed that he was, in fact, deceased inside the house.
Andrew Getty, grandson and heir to the fortune of oil baron J. Paul.
Anyway, we're getting a little off topic there. Anyway, there is a big military training exercise that is going on in about 5 southern states. Are you still there, Nate?
Yeah.
You still there?
I would say, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it sounded like you were getting attacked by a raccoon or something.
No, there, that was the broom.
That was the broom. Okay.
So anyway, my opinion for this is those guys in charge, those military generals and whatnot, they should be court-martialed. Their higher-ups should be court-martialed. Anybody who actually participated in this should be court-martialed, because they're not supposed to be outside of the base during peacetime. They're supposed to be upholding our Constitution. That's what they joined for, to preserve our freedom. And doing this type of nonsense is just that. It's to desensitize people. You know, they keep on doing it through children's video games. They do it through movies. And, you know, unless the responsible people start taking, control of their thinking and, come together with a good plan. You know, fortunately for us, we do have a good plan. I know it's 800 years, but still it's a good plan. Then we're gonna continually go down this slippery slope.
You know, this operation that's going on in these 5 southern states, this Operation Jade Helm, I'm just still learning about this. Had you heard of this before?
I have not. This is the first time I've heard, over the years. They have started to make our police forces look like military.
Right.
And they started to buff these guys up with making them look military. I mean, who's the enemy here? Right? So they're setting up, this dark or shadow government, or these elites are probably setting up for some sort of problem reaction, Hegelian dialectic solution, And it's unfortunate that they are so far removed from humanity. They're so far jaded in their thinking that for me, for a lot of these guys, there's no coming back. The best we can have is get these guys take each other out because they're biding for power, or it's an internal cold war. And we've talked a little bit about, what's happening at places like the CA and stuff. You know, there's good people there, but it's just the environment is set up for intrigue, set up for fail. Everything's secretive.
Well, Nate, I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure to have someone to chat with about these things, and I like your positive attitude, and I love the fact that you've taking the time to really study this stuff. Folks, if you get a chance, make sure you listen to some of the Billy Meyer material. Go out, download The Goblet of Truth. Go to the Future Mankind site. Go to theyfly.com. Read some of this stuff. It's very important. Anyway, you've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. My name is Mark Snyder, and we'll be back. Have a good evening. Thanks for coming on, Nate.